Hi, this is Mark Helm. It's January 2024, and we're kind of in a Back to the Basics series. And many of you have recently joined this community. A lot of you were looking at expansions and conversions as a way to get into the self-storage industry. I want to kind of go over a video I've done in the past, but maybe update it with some of the numbers that I'm using today. My name's Mark Helm. I'm the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, and I'm the creator of the Quick Start Academy, which houses the training that I offer, free and paid for. We have an upcoming boot camp in the first part of March. Dates will be released to you in an email this week. If you're interested in joining a two-day, it'll be a Friday and a Saturday, live event online with me and a few other people who are in the class, and we'll take you from wherever you are right now, whether you are in the business wanting to grow or whether you have just joined this community and are not sure if storage is for you, but you want to dive into it. We can take you from wherever you are all the way to putting your first or your next self-storage facility into service. It's premier training I offer. A lot of people have graduated, and a lot of those folks are in the self-storage business today. You'll meet some of them when you're at the Quick Start Academy boot camp. But today what I wanted to do was I wanted to go over what I think are the safest ways in today's market to get into the self-storage business, and that's expansions and conversions. Next week, we'll talk about conversions, but this week, we'll talk about expansions. And I have a lot of training out there. But what I wanted to do was, given the current climate, some of the numbers I may have used in the previous training have changed or not what I'm using today. The process is still the same. The thinking is still the same. But I wanted to maybe update some of the numbers. So what I wanted to do was show you episode 210, which was how to analyze an expansion. Many of you have recently received that video or a guide on how to analyze expansions. If not, there's a link in this episode on how to get that. It'll also be in this episode. But I wanted to show you what's different today when I'm doing my analysis of an opportunity and what are some of the numbers I'm currently using. So the best way I know to do it is let's watch the video together. And then when there's a change, when I'm doing something different, I'll interrupt and tell you. So let's watch the video on how to analyze self-storage expansion. I've talked a lot about the benefits of self-storage, and one of the benefits of self-storage is you can analyze your cash flows very accurately. Let's take a look at, in today's world, how we might analyze a self-storage opportunity. Let's look at an expansion opportunity and analyze it together. Hello, my name's Mark Helm. I'm the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, and I'm the creator of the Self-Storage Quick Start Academy. And what I do is I support the small investor who wants to get in the self-storage business or who wants to strategically grow their self-storage business, do so in a way that creates true wealth and a fulfilling career. And yes, I've talked a lot about the benefits of self-storage. Ultimately, what you have is a steel wall and a concrete floor generating apartment or office type income. And the operating expenses are very low. But the best benefit of self-storage is that the ongoing capital expenses, the expenses that drain the cash out of many other types of commercial real estate investment opportunities, are just not that present in self-storage. There's very little tenant improvements, very commissions you don't pay to keep the cash flow going. It is a very stable income stream once you're up and stabilized. Our projections are not perfect, but they tend to be very accurate. You know, very often 3, 5, 8 years in a deal, my income may be different, my expenses may be different, but it's amazing how close we can get that net operating income. Most of the time when I've been off on a project, it's usually around how long it took to lease up, or it's all around the debt area. I have more debt on it than I anticipated, or it took longer to lease up, therefore I may have more debt on it than I anticipated. But once we've gone through the lease up phase, it's amazing how accurate the projections can be on some of these projects. Let's take a look at how we would analyze a self-storage project today. In today's world, as you know, prices are very expensive. There's any number of projects I could have chosen. I could have chosen build a project, buy an existing one, do a conversion, take an existing building, convert it to self-storage, or an expansion where you buy an existing facility and then add to it. Let's do the latter. Let's look at an expansion. Now, quickly as an overview before we dive into the nitty-gritty, let's back up a minute and look down on what we're attempting to do. What we're attempting to do is to buy capital items or build capital items and then generate ongoing cash flow from that capital purchase. The art of any type of investment, but specifically self-storage, is to have the income be going up faster than the operating expenses go up. If you can do that year after year, you're going to create value each and every year. So in our storage projections, the game is you want to have the income going up, let's say 3%, that's the number we use, and we want to have the operating expenses going up 2.5%. Well, this is one of the first things I'm changing is that due to the inflation we've had, these numbers have kind of changed. I'm currently using 4% as my average income increase over the next 10 years. Yes, some years it'll be higher, some years it'll be lower, but I'm using 4% as my average. And inflation looks like it's leveled off at around 3%. So that's currently what I'm using. You can use more if you want, you can use less. But remember, the game is to keep that income growth, i.e. 4% in this case, higher than operating expense growth or inflation, in this case, 3%. The operating 2.5% has been the what inflation's been over the last decade. So that's a good number to use. 3% is a very low number. Over the past few years, we've been averaging much higher, you know, 5-6%. But 3% over the life of an investment is a very realistic number. Between 2008 and 2012, we averaged 3% during the recession. Now, there may have been a year or so where I didn't raise the prices, and last year there was a couple facilities we didn't raise the prices, but on average, over a whole 3% a year average increase is a very realistic number. Sometimes if I don't have a 3% increase or better in year one, I will probably have a 5 or 6% in year two, and very soon you catch up. Analyzing is great, but just remember all the work that we're going to be doing here in just a second. If when you put your project into service, you don't do this, your analysis will make very little difference. So your goal is to design a strategy and then execute it. So let's take a look at a opportunity I'm actually looking at. I'm not going to show you the marketing package. I don't want the actual project going out primarily because I don't think it's sold yet. And I don't want to get in trouble with the listing agents, but let's look at an opportunity, very typical type opportunity we're looking at. As I started this project, I don't even know if I'm going to make a, if it's something we want or not, but I'm going to use that project in this episode. Very typical. What we have is about a 22,000 square foot project on 2.2 acres of land, a little bit of expansion opportunity available. The 22,000 is the storage. There's also some parking and a little bit of expansion we can add to it. So the very first thing I do has nothing to do with financially analyzing. I look at the submarket. I want to get a feel. I don't have to know exactly, but I want to get a feel for how well that submarket's doing. I use Yardi Matrix. Yes, it's expensive. And not everybody has access to it, and I don't have access to it in all of the projects I look at. There's still places that it doesn't have data on. Well, I'm no longer using Yardi Matrix. Great program. It was like $6,000 every quarter. But what I'm currently using is, if I will go to Radius Plus or a similar type aggregator of information and purchase for a few hundred dollars a preliminary report. This report will give me who the competition is, rental rates, square foot per capita, a few other things in there. It doesn't replace a feasibility report, but it's currently what I'm doing. And then there's other programs out there. You can Google it, how to get data on trade areas and self-storage. There's a lot of good providers out there. But I get this preliminary report, and I basically just look and see if I see any red flags. If I see, 20 square feet per capita in a 3-mile area, that's a red flag for me. And I don't live and die by these reports, but I want to get a sense of what the trade area is. So that's currently what I'm doing today. But in this particular project, it was 7 to 8 square feet per capita. The competition appeared to be very full. There weren't a lot of 10 by 10s that we could get. And when I called the competition, there wasn't a lot of discounting going on. So I'm going to make the assumption that there's going to be demand for extra square footage. Ultimately, my feasibility report will tell me. But if I'm looking at a submarket where there's a lot of new space that hasn't been leased up yet on the market, and people are offering me 1, 2, 3 months rent to move in and a free, all kinds of discounts, it typically informs me that there's more supply than demand. But for this project, it looks like if I'm going to add 25,000 square feet, that yes, this market will most likely absorb it. So I'm going to proceed on with it. So for this program, we're going to use the Storage World Analyzer. It's a financial analysis software program that I use and have created for analyzing self-storage. You can use Excel. You don't have to use the analyzer to be successful. I still use Excel sometimes, but I almost always use the analyzer as well. I'm just going to use the analyzer because it's quicker and easier. But just know that you can do all this in Excel. Even though I'm doing an expansion opportunity, the very first thing I do is I analyze what's currently there. I want to know what they're selling, and if I bought it, what it would look like for me. So the very first thing I do is I create in the analyzer an existing self-storage analysis. For this, I'm going to name it episode 210. Now, straight from the marketing package, the very first thing I do is I enter the unit mix. How many 5x5s? How many 10x10s? And what the street rate is. What I want to know is, what is the unit mix? But more importantly, what is the gross potential income? In other words, if every unit was rented and everybody was paying the street rate, what is the maximum income this facility can generate? Now, I could have put the parking in under the unit mix, but given that I'm going to be doing an expansion, and some of that parking is going to go, I put it down as additional income. So now I have you. We have the income in there. Next, we do the purchase price and loan assumptions. I'm going to assume that I'm going to put in a purchase price of $2 million. I don't know what we would end up offering, but let's start there. It's listed for $2.2 million. And I'm going to put in a 75% loan to value, just regular local bank loan. You could use a CMB loan. You could use SBA lending. But let's just use regular bank financing. Usually that's a 20-year amortization. Let's say 5.5% interest. Well, for interest rates, obviously today they're going to be higher. If I'm going on a conventional bank loan, 20-year loan, I would probably go with 7.25% today in my interest rate. Possibly you can get it for less in the permanent market. Right now it's a little less. I've seen people getting loans at 6.75%, but that's currently what I would be using today. If I'm going SBA, they kind of go up. It depends on what SBA loan I'm using. Check with some of the providers like Bank 5/9 or Live Oak. If there's construction involved, it's probably a quarter over prime, at least during the construction period or the interest-only period. In SBAs, very often I can get up to 36 months of interest-only. And if it's amortizing out, I can probably, if you're doing the SBA loan where they blend the two loans together, you're probably at about 7.75. I've seen some people recently be getting that. And remember, on SBA, your amortization period is 25 years. So even though your interest rate's higher, your monthly payment's close to the same. But those are kind of the interest rate numbers I'm using today. Call a couple providers when you're doing your first or next preliminary pro forma, kind of get some benchmark interest numbers to use, and know that you can negotiate those sometimes as you're actually presenting a deal to a bank. Interest. Next, I enter the project assumptions. This is what makes a big difference on how we analyze deals over just doing a snapshot of a deal when it's stabilized. So I'm going to assume that my income is going to go up 3% a year, like we talked about, and that my operating expenses will go up 2.5%. Again, I'm currently using 4% on interest income increase, 3% on operating expense increase. You can raise or lower it how you want, but that's just what I'm using today in my preliminary performance. Now, depending on what the facility is, what type of facility, where it's located, I'm going to use a 7 cap rate for future values. That's called a reversion cap rate. Now, I know it's hard to buy today on a 7% cap rate, but in the future, I don't know what it's going to be. So I try to always use a cap rate higher than what they currently are today, just to be safe on my projections. I'm still using a 7 cap today. I probably shouldn't have been using a 7 cap way back when cap rates were 5%, but I still try to have it higher in the future than it currently is right now. Today, cap rates are kind of 6.5 to 7, maybe 7.25. But as interest rates go down, cap rates are going to go down. So I think 7 cap for future values is a realistic number to be using today. Odds are it's going to be lower than that 5 years from now, 10 years from now. What happens is the program's going to take that, whatever the net operating income, which is income minus operating expenses, this program will take whatever the NOI is projected to be in each given year and put a value for the facility on it at a 7% cap. Then I'm going to assume my cost of sale is 2 to 3%. Now, it can be higher. We typically will market directly to the REITs, and that's what we've seen that it costs us. And I'm going to put in stabilized occupancy at let's say 85%. So in other words, this program is going to take whatever the gross potential income is and assume that the economic income is going to be 85%. Now, I know many are higher. Sometimes I'll use 88, but I never go over 88. Even if they're currently at 99 or 95%, I'm going to underwrite it at 88 because A, a bank's going to do that, but B, that's more the historical. This blip of being over 90%, I don't know if it will continue to last. If I'm ever fixing a project and I don't think I'm going to be 85% the first year or so, we can adjust it, as you see here, and put in an average occupancy year by year. But if I don't think I can get it to 85 or better, I'm probably not going to buy it. The next step to completing the analysis for the existing property is to fill in my operating expenses. This is the biggest mistake I see people do. Most of the time, especially new people, will take all of the operating expenses from the marketing package and put that in their analysis. What's in the marketing package is interesting. I'm very interested in it. But I'm going to run it a certain way. I'm going to have, and you are going to have, a certain number of employees, for example, or no employees. You've got to figure out how you're going to run it. I look very closely at what they have in the insurance number, the utility number, and I look to make sure that the agent has marked up the property taxes to what the list price would be, and I use those. But most of the others I put in myself, so I know that a website cost me $3,600. I know that I'm going to spend a few thousand dollars on online marketing. Now, I spend a lot more today on online marketing than I did when this video was done. Primarily, it's Google. And especially if you're in markets where there's REITs. Today, I would probably, like if I'm buying an existing facility and not doing any expansion, which I haven't been able to do in a long time, I'd probably still use about a $5,000 a year number. If I'm adding more space on, it's $8,000 on the low end, $10,000-$12,000 on the high end. Just kind of depends on the market. The bigger the market, the more competition I have, the more I'm going to spend on Google pay-per-click because there's other people using it, and Google pay-per-click typically is a auction type process, and the more people using it in a particular market area or trade area, the more expensive it is per click. So those are the numbers I'm using today. We typically will hire one person for one full-time employee for every 300,000, 335,000 gross income a project generates. So I will adjust my employees to that level. Today there's a lot more automated facilities. If I'm analyzing a facility, I'm considering not having a manager, I still need somebody. So even though they're not employees, I might create a line called boots on the ground or 1099. And we usually pay someone $700 to $800, maybe $1,000 a month, depending on the size of the facility, just to be the boots on the ground there if I don't have a manager. Boots on the ground are people who clean the units, get them ready to go, do lock inspection reports, clean the facility up. If you have a kiosk, keep it loaded. Just, you need somebody there a few times a week just to keep things going. So those are the numbers I'm using on automated facilities today. I put in my own repair numbers. I look at what they have, but I don't know what makes that number up. I just know that typically our maintenance number is about 12 to 14 or 15 cents a square foot per year, depending on how old the property is and how well it's been maintained. I look and see if I might have to pay for grass cutting. I put something in to buy tools and bolt cutters, and I assume my gate's going to go down or a camera's going to go out, so I'll put something in there. I look at their utility number, up it slightly, and use that, and I do the same thing with the insurance. And then I look at what they projected for taxes. I know what we'll pay in a management fee. And then I put in the other expenses. This is stuff that's usually not in a marketing package, but I put it in there anyway. Why? Because we're going to spend it. I'm going to buy paper clips. I'm going to buy paper. So I put everything in and then I save it. And let's look at the review tab. Very typical here. This is just one of the many tabs, as you can see. This is the summary of the project. It gives the first 5 years. But I can see at a quick glance that at $2 million, running it how we run it, we're probably going to get a 2 to 5% cash on cash return the first few years with 25% down. And we're going to get over a 10-year period, with these assumptions, about a 16% internal rate of return. Now, there's not too many of us who are going to be excited about a deal like this. Now, this is very typical of what you see on the market today, right? Now, most people will stop here, but let's don't stop here. Let's go to the next step and see what we can turn this into if we do a value add play. Now, what happens is people will analyze 5-10 projects that look like this, get frustrated, and move on, and self-storage just was a good idea. The time's not right. There's always deals. No matter what's going on in the market condition, there's always deals and ways to create deals where none exists. Let's see if this is one of them. I don't know if it is, but let's see if it is. Let's see what it would look like. We've got some additional land. I did an analysis just looking at the survey, and it looks like I could get about 30,000 gross square feet of building on there. I'd lose some parking. I still have a little bit of parking. I'd lose some, but let's see what it would look like. So we're going to do an expansion analysis now. So to do an expansion, we're going to start all over. I'm going to create a new analysis. Now in the analyzer, what's good is I don't have to re-enter everything. I'm going to create an analysis of an expansion. I'm going to add in, and I'm going to populate it with the initial existing facility analysis I did. Now, I didn't show you all the tabs in the existing analysis, but one of the tabs is the current unit mix. So you can see that the non-climate controlled units are generating, with this unit mix, 945 gross potential income per square foot, and climate control is 1341. On my expansion, I'm going to use these numbers. Yes, I'll discount them because I don't know exactly what the unit mix is now, and we'll probably give some incentives or so. So I'll discount these numbers a little bit, but I need to know what these are. So I figured out we could add about 30,000 gross square footage, and I want some of it to be climate control. So there'll be hallways and entryways. So let's assume of the 30,000 square feet, about 80% of it will be generating income. Now, I could try to make a unit mix up, but I don't do that here. At some point, if we move on with it, someone will create a unit mix for me. Usually we have the self-storage fabricating companies do it. But for now, I'm just going to use square footage. So if we're building a gross building of 30,000, 80% of that's 24,000 square feet. So I'm going to assume 24,000 square feet is going to be generating income. And to keep it simple for this analysis, let's just make half of it climate control and half of it non-climate control. If I'm getting 945 a square foot for non-climate and 1341 for climate, I'm just going to assume that in my analysis that I'll be getting 850 for the non-climate control, and let's reduce the climate control to 1250. Now here you got to do a little bit of math. If I'm doing 50% climate control, 50% non-climate control, and I'm using 850 and 1250 per square foot income respectively, that means my average income over the 24,000 square feet is going to be 1050 a square foot. So you can see in the very first tab on the expansion, my unit mix is there. I'm for the additional square footage to be added, I'm going to add 24,000 square feet at $10.50 a square foot. Now you just have to put it in the yearly tab and the monthly auto populates. And I am taking some of the parking away, so I'm going to reduce the current parking by about half. Next, I'm going to add a construction budget. Now, this is a preliminary analysis, so I'm just going to use a per square foot number. At some point, if we move forward, I will put in a full construction budget. But given this is single-story metal self-storage projects like you see all over the country, I think we can build it for about $52 a square foot. Boy, has this changed a lot. Today, for the same facility, I'd probably be using $75 a square foot for construction costs, maybe even up to $85. It just depends. On 25,000 square feet, I'd probably use $75 today. I've seen it pushing 100 sometimes for small expansions where you don't have a lot of square feet to spread that over. A lot depends if you're using a GC or if you have a construction manager. We go into that in other training, but those are the numbers I'm using today. If it's a preliminary, pro forma, single story, you know, drive up or climate control, I'm probably using $75-$77 a square foot. But you could use 85 sometimes and spend more. That's probably been one of the bigger changes. Some people can build it for less. Some people would spend a little more, but 52 I think is a good average. If you have no idea where to go, you can go to the Self-Storage Almanac, or you can get books from Inside Self-Storage or Minico, and there's all kinds of information you can find out that will give you averages for construction and all types of self-storage data. So the next thing I do on the loan assumption page, really the only thing I'm going to change is I'm going to assume that if I'm doing an expansion, we'll be able to negotiate a couple of years of interest only. So I put 2 in the interest only years tab. And I want to introduce a concept here. Since we're doing construction, if you think about it, the loan's going to now include my acquisition plus my construction. So in year one, we're building the building. So if I have interest only in year one and I'm making construction draws, I'm not, the day we close, going to be paying interest on the full amount of the loan. So at this stage, I'm just going to make an assumption. I'm going to say I'll probably in year one spend about 70% of what the full interest amount is. So in year one, I'm going to reduce the interest 30%. I don't know if that's exact, but it's a fairly good estimate. In year two, the building will be up, so I'll be paying the interest on the full amount of the loan. I'm introducing that concept here because when we get to the operating expense tab, the same thing's going to apply. Next, we go to the assumptions page, and you'll notice that we have a few more lines on the assumption. We left the gross square foot increase blank because our square footage came directly from the unit mix page. But remember, we're building 30,000 square feet with only 24,000 generating income. So I'm going to assume I added that to the what's existing there, and it looks like that we'd have about 12% of this project is going to be common areas. So that's the number I put in there. You could actually do the math and get an exact number, but I think it's going to be very close to 12. Next is construction complete time. That's a new line item. Let's say that it takes you a year of planning and construction before you can start renting it. Could be shorter, could be longer, depending on where you are, but we're going to use a year or 12 months. And then finally, absorption. How many square feet on average will you rent per month? Now, again, ultimately, your feasibility report is going to tell you that, but let's assume that it's 1,200 square feet. I've had it more, I've had it less, but And I think that's a good average number for a project like this. I'm still using 12 months construction time. Sometimes I can get it done a little quicker, but I still put in 12 months to get approvals and get construction going. What that's really saying is not when you're necessarily your construction's totally done, punch list done. What it's saying is I'm gonna start generating income on my expansion after a month like this. And then the last step, step five, again, we're going to go through the operating expenses. So I'm going to assume with the new expanded facility, we're going to run this on about 1.5 people. But again, I won't need that much the first year, so I'm going to reduce the first year's personnel cost by 50%. And then once the building's up and we're renting it, we're going to start having more hours of people there working. I also put in $3,500 worth of bonuses per year to incentivize them to lease it up. And I'm going to up my online marketing to $4,000. Again, I'm going to cut it in year one, though, while I'm under construction, because I'll start really spending more money when we're in the lease up. I increased the maintenance slightly because we've got more square footage. But again, I reduced it 25% year one because that building isn't up. Same thing with property insurance. And I'm also going to increase the property taxes, but I'm going to reduce it year one and two because if the building goes into service year two, it most likely be year three before any increase in property taxes would hit. In the other section, the majority of the cost in the bank fees and Visa charges are the Visa charges, the charges for cards. So I'm going to increase that because we've got more square footage. Therefore, we'll be taking more credit cards. But I'm going to reduce it again year one. In this case, I'm just guessing 35%. I pretty much left everything else there the same. So let's take a look at what this expansion will now look like. Well, it's getting better. We try to have a 20% internal rate of return. That's one of our benchmark numbers. And I want to see my cash on cash returns 12, 13, 14, 15% by year four and five. We're not quite there, but we're getting better. So you can look now and see how doing this expansion can take a project that was making 2 to 5%, and now it's going from 2 to 11%. Not quite what we want, but closer. So we could tweak many things here to improve it, but I try to be careful not to reduce my construction cost or operating costs too much. But we can. We can change. I could add more climate control and get more. There's many things I could do. But for now, let's just see what it would look like if we reduce the offering price $200,000. Now it's getting very close. My year four, I'm at 12.5%, 5, 13%. I'm now over my 20% IRR benchmark number. If you went to the 10-year cash flow page, what you would see is in year five, the value of that project now is $4.2 million. So on the summary page, you see we have $3,068,000 in the deal between acquisition and construction. And by year five, it'd be worth $4.2 million. So we would have made slightly over $1 million in value, and we would be having a 13 to 13.5% cash on cash return. For us, that works. There's not a lot of slippage in this for us, but it would technically work. Your requirements may be higher or lower. This doesn't necessarily mean we're going to buy the project, but it looks like it could work, and further research will determine if this really works. But what's important here is I wanted to show you how we do an analysis. We took a project that was making 2% for us year one, and maybe going to 5%, and we turned it into something that literally is worth considering. Now, ultimately, I don't think we're going to buy this simply because there are other projects we're looking at that are generating better returns than this. And I don't think I can get this much lower than what we have in this current analysis. So I'm going to focus on those other ones, but I could circle back to this one if we need it. But I wanted to share with you how we analyze deals in today's market. Now, I've known I throw a lot out at you. You can save this and go back and use it for research. Remember, this is time sensitive, so numbers tend to change over time. But the main concept is still the same. I hope this helps you as you are analyzing storage projects out there. And how can I turn a project that doesn't look very good into a project that does look good, or is at least worth considering? You do this step on enough projects, you'll quickly get very quick and very good at it. So I hope this supports you in getting in the most fantastic business that there is for the small investor, the self-storage business. Well, I hope this has helped. This was a good training video in my humble opinion, handsome fellow. But I just wanted to share with you January 2024, what I might be doing a little bit differently than when I originally did this, but the concept is still the same. There are a lot of deals out there, and actually there's a lot less people going for those deals than there were when that original episode was done. Yes, you got to go through more analysis to find one that works. Yes, you're going to burn a lot more calories on financing than you did when episode 210 was originally videoed. But there's still a lot of opportunity out there. Use this time in the economy to get a real anchor in the self-storage space if that is your goal. This business is fantastic, and when we are in times like this, this is when the opportunities are there. So thank you very much. My name's Mark Helm. If you'd like to find out more about the Storage World Analyzer that you saw throughout this video, there'll be a link at the end of the video to click and find out more about it. I look forward to being with you next week as we talk about conversions. I love conversions. I'll see you then.